That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Used to be one of the rotten ones, and you liked it for
that. Rochelle Ballard was the most influential female surfer of my youth, even more so than her contemporary, the four-time world champ Lisa Anderson. While Lisa was dogged and tenacious, Rochelle was effervescent, present, and seemed to be fueled by a desire to get big barrels more than to win contests. Perhaps that was the result of her growing up on Kauai from the age of six, where she was encouraged to surf by her neighbor and four-time world champ Margot Oberg. At age 26, Rochelle won the QS and the following year finished fourth in the world on the CT. Through her 15 years on tour, she won 8 events and finished first in the Surfer Magazine's fan-voted popularity contest, the Surfer's Poll, 3 different times in 2000, 2001, and 2002. She retired from professional competitive surfing at the age of 36 for reasons that she will detail in our chat. And Ballard has transitioned gracefully into life off tour. In 2002, she stunt doubled for lead actress Kate Bosworth in Universal's feature film Blue Crush. Most of her time nowadays is devoted to her wellness business based on Kauai called Surf Into Yoga that centers around weekly yoga classes, surf lessons, and more in-depth private retreats, of which she has an impressive list of celebrity clientele intermixed with regular old tourists. That business has also spawned an activewear clothing line. And the day before I actually recorded this interview with Rochelle, I went for a surf with Dave Parmenter, who happened to be wearing a pair of her board shorts. So that's a pretty strong endorsement. All of this stuff is actually I've linked to on surfsplendorpodcast.com, as always. And we recorded this chat at Rochelle's home on Kauai, where we unfortunately were cut short due to shuffles in both of our schedules. So I would have loved to chat with her for hours, and I certainly will in the future. So just consider this an introduction. And the entry point for this chat was an Instagram that Rochelle posted 2 years ago when the WSL was in Fiji. Rochelle had surfed WSL events at Cloudbreak through the mid-2000s, but the women's tour stopped competing there for about, seven years, and then resumed again in 2014. In 2017, the event was blessed with really solid swell, and Courtney Conlogue and Tatiana Weston Webb charged the final, which took place in thumping surf in the first heat of the morning at low tide on the final day. Disappointingly, neither surfer made a barrel, and Courtney actually won that final with an 8.74 combined heat total. The image that Rochelle posted to commemorate the event was of the 2007 event where she was knifing into an 8-footer. I asked her about that post and asked her about her thoughts on the fact that that wave of hers from 2007 and a lot of hers would have won any of the heats a decade later in 2017.
Well, I put that post up because it's one of my favorite memories in my career because the waves were absolutely firing. And I actually got the wave right after the buzzer.
Oh no.
Which was kind of silly because it was like a 12. And I just got shocked out of my mind and spit out of this like beauty. And so with the girls being back at Cloud Break and being challenged by those type of waves and grabbing your rail backside and having the courage and the ability to barrel ride well. I posted it because I was excited about it in for myself, but also for women surfing, and posting it to encourage them. And later, you know, a few of the girls said that they were all watching it and being inspired by it while they're competing out there. And it takes time. You know, barrel riding is one of those things where you really have to put that time into it to understand it.
Yeah. Well, what became glaringly obvious to me in that post was like the barrel riding, certainly the barrel riding more than anything else that you were doing back like in the mid-90s, mid-2000s, mm-hmm. would win heats today. Surfing has progressed in certain ways, yeah. but your barrel riding and charging too would set the standard for a lot of heats today.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So, but what are your thoughts on that? Like, what are your thoughts on why hasn't the women's tour it evolved in that last 10 or 20 years?
I think that it's, you know, riding big waves and barrels, it's a passion and you got to want it. And you can't do it just because there's a contest, you know, in that type of a wave. And I think that that's probably the biggest challenge in women surfing is the desire and the passion to be out there and to be challenged by it because it's gnarly. You know, like I think about right now in my life, I'm 48 and I have a successful career in wellness and with retreats and everything, and I no longer get paid to go surfing. And so to go surf out at Pipeline and Backdoor when it's doing its thing, I think more about it now in the sense of like, ooh, that's a little risky if I injure myself, you know yeah. what I mean? And so you have to be all in when you're going out at waves like Cloud Break and, you know, Chopo and Pipeline and Backdoor, because there's great odds of injury and hurting yourself, and all at the same time getting like the ride of your life and the right. experience with it. And I think that when I first started, because I grew up on Kauai and I grew up with the Kauai boys, and that's what I was used to doing, and that's all I knew was to charge, or it's like I don't get to go surf and hang out with them.
Yeah.
And that's what really pushed me. And when I first moved to Oahu, you know, everybody's like, oh, this is the proving grounds, this is what you do, let's go. And I'm like, okay. And so that's what I did. And I didn't realize until, I guess, as I got deeper into it, wow, like there's really not that many of the girls want to do this.
That surprises me.
Yeah. But also to credit the women that are there right now in surfing, I think they all have great technique and ability. And I've seen great rides in the barrels from them, you know, front side and backside.
Yeah.
So it's not a question of ability and why haven't they stepped up to that level. I just think it's a matter of like, one, having more events in waves like that. You know, I mean, we had Tavaru and Cloud and Chopo on our schedule.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then at one point we had the OP Boat Challenge that was the Surfer Pole, you know, magazine specialty. And we got to go to the Mentawais with like, you know, top four girls and top six men in the surfer poles. And that was amazing.
Yeah.
We were getting shocked out of our mind the whole time. It was epic. And so I think it takes that also. And I see more, you know, girls, I think, starting to want to get out there and charge. But you got to be committed. You have to, like, take the risk for the reward.
You say that you see girls that are stepping up. Who are those girls? Like, are they out at Pipeline in free surf sessions?
I'm not even around Pipe that much anymore. Like, if I take a trip over there, I might see it. But, you know, I'm on Kauai. I'm surfing with my friends and still doing what I love to do. But it's just a different story. Carissa, you know, is a great barrel rider. Coco gets out there and you know, every winter I see her get a couple of sick ones. And yeah. so she's still out there trying to push it. And I keep, you know, messaging with her going, I'm coming. Let's go surf out there together.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's just a matter of more girls getting out there more often. But I think the biggest challenge it's out of control crowded out there. Like, I don't even get that inspired to go there now because it's way, way more crowded than it used to be.
Yeah, it's insane.
And there's not really that great of a pecking order.
Right.
Whereas before, there was a big localized pecking order, and I got more waves like that.
Right.
So it's different.
There's plenty of other waves, though, of consequence that you can go out and find. You obviously, if you want to get the spotlight, pipe is the place to do it. But in terms of like developing the skill set for charging and barrel riding, waves are out there.
Sure. And I think that Kelly's Wave Pool is a great venue to be able to learn how to ride the barrel better.
Right.
You know, and they have the ability to get there and get into that wave more often. You know, that last section is a drainer.
Totally.
So it's really helpful, I think, to develop skills. And for me, that's where I really learned my best barrel riding was when I went to the Mentawais and we were on boat trips, because the waves are just, they're machines for barrel riding. And it's different in Hawaii. Like, it's more unpredictable, and the way that sections build up and the water's thicker, like, there's so many different elements that come into it in Hawaii. And you go, you know, out to Indo and it's like, oh, there's nobody in the lineup, and it's just barrel after barrel spitting. And so you have so many opportunities to build on your ability and to get that practice time in there.
I'm curious, there's a detail in there about you're talking about WSL not necessarily providing the opportunities in terms of locations. There seems to be a fine line between the event at Piahi.
Yeah.
I think 2 years ago, Kiala won without completing a ride.
Yeah.
Where's the fine line between like giving people the opportunity to really thrive and elevate the sport and progress the sport versus endangering the athletes?
Yeah, I'm with you. It's, you know, for me, I'm a charger, obviously, but I'm also thoughtful of what I'm doing in the science of the body. I probably have some like adversity with it, because I think that it's a great opportunity for women surfing to be able to compete at that level and to be acknowledged and to receive the value of what they're doing in equality. But I also have kind of an old school mentality with it growing up with the boys. I think that, you know, I think about how many years and how much time all those guys spent out at Piahi and, you know, even towing bigger waves and paddling into outer reef breaks and doing all that stuff before there was even an event there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that there's a part of me that feels like it's a little bit too soon. I think that they need to spend more time out there because it's dangerous. And I don't think they're even taking off on the right spot on the wave.
Right.
They're not paddling in with like enough momentum and deep, deep, strong, aggressive commitment to where it's like, I'm going, but knowing that that's a good wave to go on too. So it's tricky. And you know, I don't want to do what they're doing. I give them 100% credit for what they're doing and charging. I just know for me, like as I was, you know, in the, you know, very first forefronting of towing and, you know, big waves and everything else, like the ability also comes with having the body type, because it's science, you know, and there's this gravity pull. And I think that the women are like, for me, I just went, you know what? I'm not big enough. I'm 5'1 and I'm 106 pounds. I can't get down this wave. Like, I remember the first time that I paddled in out at Tahiti. And the first day we surfed this like epic ride, it was like, you know, it was only like 8 to 10 feet out there, but you know how Tahiti is, it's just thick, so it's still gnarly. And you know, we were just getting the sickest barrels. And then the next day we surfed Sapi Noose, and it was big. It was like 10 to 15 feet big and thick, and nobody was out. And I'm in a boat with just girls. And they're like, well, of course you're going to be the first one out there. You got to go guinea pig it and test it out. And I'm just like, oh my God, I don't even have a paddle. I don't even have a tow board. I didn't even have a vest that fit me because I was too small. And so I grabbed my like potato chip 6'3", because back then they were making the boards too narrow and too thin. And I had just a pair of board shorts and a bikini on. And so I went out there And the first couple, I got a couple sick barrels and got spat out. And then it was like, okay, you know, Poto was telling me, and he's like, let's get you a big one. And I was like, no, just like slow down for a second. I'm not ready for this monstrosity of a wave to like eat me up and like destroy me. So just take your time. And because it was my second day towing, I didn't know anything about it. So when he all of a sudden saw this big lump come through, and we were too far out the back, we weren't right there in the lineup, we just zip into it. We were flying into this wave, and I was just like, oh my God, this is kind of crazy. And I'm like getting worn out before I even get into the wave. And I didn't think that I could just let go and say, no, I'm not gonna do it.
Right.
I thought I had to, because you're just in the moment of it and it's all happening. And you know, that's what I did. And so I let go of the rope, and all of a sudden this wave built into a mountain of water, and it foiled over me so thick and gnarly that I was like, wow, I'm in this barrel, and I just feel like I'm in this house right now.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I felt it, this lift, and I was like, oh my God, I'm not going to get down the face. And so I was in the barrel, still dropping through this wave, and the only thing I knew how to do was grab my rail. I'm like, this is the only thing I can do to feel like I can get down this wave and hold on. And so I'm in the barrel, and all of a sudden I feel the lift, and I'm halfway down the face of the wave riding the barrel, and it lifts me with it up and over this like thick ass Chopo style lip. And I just, everything went silent, and it was that moment before the explosion. And it's like, and all of a sudden you just, you know, they do it in movies where everything just goes,
yep.
And it's this blackout moment. And then it went, and everything just went spun out of control, and it just ragdolled me everywhere. I, unbelievably enough, didn't black out and didn't really hurt myself.
Shocking.
It was just a shock, and yeah. I don't remember if I took a breath or if I went under for 2 weeks. I think I barely, like, my lips, you know, touched the surface to get grasp for air, and then the next one hit me, and he didn't have time to get me. And then he finally was able to pick me up, and he's like, get on the ski. I'm like, I can't move my body. You have to grab me right now. And so he grabbed my arm and hoisted me up and took me over to the boat. And I could barely breathe. I was spun out. I lost my voice, and my lungs got compressed, and there was water in them. And I was shot for the day, because he just whipped me into the biggest, most craziest thing ever, and I was way too deep.
Yeah.
And my body was just, it was impossible from the position that he put me in, because I'm 106 pounds.
Right.
And I didn't have any weights in the board. I didn't have any momentum to get into that wave.
Yeah.
So that was my big realization of like the power of big wave surfing and what it takes and what you need. And I still went out and I, you know, surfed bigger waves after that. You know, I towed in to like a, you know, whatever it was, a 20 footer during Blue Crush and everything else. And that was really cool, and it was really fun. But I had a realization, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to stick to like riding big barrels and surfing big sunset, you know, and, you know, maybe small Waimea and stuff, but I'm not really wanting to dive into the other stuff because my life was more important to me than that.
Yeah.
And, the ability to be able to still surf and walk and,
do you have footage? You know. Do you have footage of that wipeout?
You know, I have, it's somewhere.
You saw it anyways.
It's somewhere. It's Jim Roosey.
Oh, okay.
That shot it and has the photos and the video.
Got it.
And I've been trying to get it from him because, you know, the stuff that it has is like such low resolution in it.
Right.
And I have to find where it is. But I do have photos.
Yeah.
And it was on the cover, you know, when we had Surfer and Surfing Girl magazines and all that great stuff, which blows my mind that they don't have any today. It's wild.
Well, that was one of my questions later. But what surf media do you follow at this point?
It's just online, you know. That's the tricky thing.
What online?
It's just websites? Weird now. It's like I don't even really go to. I guess I go to Surfline the most for sure.
Just to check cams though, or to actually read articles and stuff.
Sometimes I'll read articles. Like I don't have that much time in my life for just hanging out and, you know, catching up in that way.
Yeah.
because I'm so busy with my retreat business and everything, and then I choose to do other things with my free time. But when I feel like there's something that catches my eye and my attention, then yes, I dive into articles and want to learn more about who's doing what, you know, and keeping up and all that. But it's Instagram, you know?
I know.
It's really, that's what it's at, is I have the, you know, guys and girls that I follow and enjoy watching their surfing and just what they're up to in their life. And I think it's cool. It's neat that I can keep so in touch with all that and still be, you know, on remote Kauai.
Right.
But I think that there are some aspects that have watered it down and taken away from it for sure. Like, I loved being able to get the new Surfer and surfing and, like, you know, Trans World and be able to dive into the magazines. And it's just fun. And it's just, it's old news now by the time you pick up a magazine. That's
right.
The challenge with it.
Yeah. You know? How did you discover yoga, or when did you discover yoga?
When I was just probably a senior in high school, and then really just out of high school, I got injured and I needed to understand how to heal my body. And my next door neighbor here in Omau, where I live, is a yoga teacher, and she's also a body worker. And so she like helped heal my body, and it made me realize how important yoga is, and the breath is, and movement, and being self-healing, you know, being able to really recover and learn how to take care of yourself. And then also having people facilitate, you know, body work and nutrition and wellness and life coaching and all that good stuff. And that's when I really dove into all of that stuff, because I realized how much I didn't know.
Yeah.
And how much I really wanted to understand and learn. And so that was my first experience. And I ended up getting my massage license when I was 19.
Oh, wow.
And I wanted to be a chiropractor. I was super into wellness and kind of did it at the same time as my surfing career. And so when I was on the tour and I didn't have any sponsorship, you know, I'd work on the guys, you know, as soon as I'd lose out in the contest, I was like, oh, time to get to work. And
I
just
that.
Line them up and that's just fun. Start working on everybody. And that's how I was able to get my way around tour until I got sponsored by O'Neill.
Amazing.
Yeah. And then I just decided, okay, I really want to focus on my career now, because it's a lot to be able to like really surf hard, focus on what you're doing, have downtime. And that's where I didn't have any downtime because I was busy doing body work.
That's, you've navigated, or you transitioned really gracefully out of pro surfing into a career. And that's something that I think a lot of people don't have the skill set to do. Like, you were wise to invest in other things other than just surfing.
For sure. And I was really fortunate that my parents taught me well.
Is that where that came from?
Yeah. My parents are business owners and hard workers, and they own Brennecke's Beach Broiler here in Poipu.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Nukumoi Surf Shop. And then my mom is remarried to Bob French, and they do that business together, and it's all family business style. And then my dad, Ron Gordinas, he is, he does build outs for high-end retail shops. He just did the Louis Vuitton over in Waikiki. And so they're all just like these great entrepreneurs and hard workers. And they always supported me having the quote unquote surfing career. But there's like, well, how are you going to actually make money? We know you love surfing and you want to travel the world surfing and do contests and stuff, but you need to figure out an alternative and like how you're actually going to like bring money in. And when I went to start my surfing career, my mom had set aside college money for me. And she said, okay, so I'd want you to go to college, but if the surfing thing's really what you really want to do, that's fine. And you can use that money, but you have to write letters to the community and keep putting proposals out to surf companies and to wherever you think you can to help support your career so that you can travel and do all that. And whatever you don't come up with, then you can tap into that like on your trips. And so I learned how to manage my career and communicate, you know, with endorsements and companies and kind of PR that. And so it really was helpful.
Good for mom.
Yeah.
It was a really pragmatic approach to it.
Yeah, totally. She was very supportive and really great like that. And she would, I, you know, finish surfing a contest and she'd you know, try to coach me through it. Tell me what I did wrong.
Yeah.
She doesn't even surf.
That's funny.
Yeah, that's great.
So tell me about the current incarnation of your business, Surf Into Yoga. What is it?
So Surf Into Yoga started when I finished my surfing career. I was like, what am I going to do? And really, all of my friends were like, well, you should really be doing surf and yoga retreats, because that's what you, like, innately, like, you know, should be doing. Because you, you know, I did my surf camps with the kids, and we do yoga, and I, and, you know, help them with, like, their diet, and just show them about how to eat, like, good whole foods and stuff like that, and that spirit of surfing, and, like, some good, like, I mean, life coaching is such a watered down word, I feel sometimes now, but without realizing it, that's what I was doing, was I was just being that mentor to all of these women that, like, ended up becoming the girls that are there on the tour now. Yeah. And they're championing surfing, women surfing. So, you know, taking all that that I did for 6 years and the body work and everything else, and I was just so into yoga. And then, you know, Peggy Hall did that Yoga for Surfers video with Taylor Knox and I. And so it just kind of made sense that I would do retreats. And so I made Surf Into Yoga a video with my friends, John Roderick and Chanel Sladix, that's a pro snowboarder. And so we made this, like, sequencing of, like, coming from an athlete perspective of, like, just warm-ups and cool-downs. And they're just simple, like, 10-15 minute practices. And we called it Surf Into Yoga because it was like I was coming from my surfing career into yoga.
Yeah.
And that's why and where that name came from. And I believe that I'm actually the first surf and yoga retreat business in the world that started within what I did. And it built from there. All of a sudden, everybody wants to do surf and yoga retreats around the world now. And so, yeah, and I started it at my house at Sunset. You know, I was vacation renting out my places, and I'd have all these wellness gatherings and events and, like, you know, live music and, like, this thing that we did, Yoga Garden, and we'd do yoga and do gardening stuff. And, wow. You know, Mike Love came and played music, and it was just really cool. Did some really far out fun stuff when I was living there. So it was, my home ended up becoming a wellness retreat center and a gathering place for the North Shore. And so now that I'm back on Kauai, I kind of took it a bit away from that, and people I help them find places to stay, typically here on the South Shore in Poipu, and then I cater private retreats for them. And so it's not a group retreat, but it's all about them. You know, I just had a couple in a row, and it's just, it's so fun, because in doing this customized retreat, it really flows with whatever is they need and whatever's going on. So we could have this grand old plan to, like, go surfing and do yoga every day, and then all of a sudden they need body work and they need nutrition and they need, you know, my kinesiologist to come in and assist, and we need to slow down and life coach, or we need to go on a walk or whatever it needs to happen, or meditate, or, you know, change the program up and reset. And then taking, like, that language and behavior of what we know, and how do you change it? Like, what are the things that need to change in the rules and the belief system and the language that you speak, and how it builds our physicality, and, like, what our lives are, what story are we telling, and how do we actually want to go from here? And I was able to receive a lot of life coaching the last few years of my career. And my mom, again, I was just sucking at competing, and I was so frustrated because I was so passionate with surfing, and everybody was like, God, what is wrong with you? You're always the dark horse, but you just can't figure out how to win. And so I loved surfing, but I'd get in a heat and I would just crumble, and I couldn't put it together in my mind because I was just so nervous, and I'd sabotage my experience, you know, in that 20 minutes or whatever it was. So she got me for Christmas in 96, Anthony Robbins' 30-day program. And I did that program, and I just discovered a whole new perspective of understanding that you can actually create your own rules of living. It doesn't have to be what you're born with or what you were told and taught in your family and in your community or religion or whatever it is, or whatever you translated in your own mind, because it's all perception. Mm-hmm. And so that next year in 97, I, you know, won the Billabong Pro. I got 2 10s in the semi against Lane. I beat Lisa in the final. I won the QS series. I won a few events in the CT. You know, it was just everything came together. And it all made sense to me how to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And it really, it's mastering your mind.
It's beautiful.
It's how do you take your mind and control all of the maybe negative lower vibration stuff or the sabotage or whatever it is, and pull it into your heart and let your heart be your guide and let your heart lead that vibration that's so true to your nature and spirit of what you really want to do. And after that, I really kept following Anthony Robbins and all of his programming, and I did the life coaching with their programs. And I remember in France and different places around the world, I'd have to go and buy a card and go sit at a payphone for like my half hour session with the lady and do my meetings with
Amazing.
Them.
Amazing.
And we didn't have cell phones, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I did.
Quick interruption. Rochelle will go on to explain how she constantly tried to partner with sponsors to grow with them, but eventually realized that they actually enforced more parameters than they offered in terms of a partnership, something that both brands and pro surfers should listen to today and perhaps consider a new paradigm. But as it relates to life coaching and wellness, last week we introduced our own partnership with BetterHelp. BetterHelp has reworked the counseling and therapy model by providing those things online in the convenience of your home, which also helps reduce the cost. You can connect with over 6,000 U.S. licensed therapists. I mentioned 3,000 last week, but it's over 6,000 in their network now, which ensures that you find the exact right fit, counselor or therapist. And if you're unhappy with your counselor at any time for any reason, you can just request a new one. So licensed in the U.S., this service is available worldwide. You can do your sessions through text, chat, phone, or video. Financial aid is available for those who qualify. This is not a crisis line. It is secure, confidential, convenient, professional counseling. You can find specialists for depression, stress, relationships, sleeping, LGBT matters, grief, family conflicts. It's all available on betterhelp.com/surf, where there's a questionnaire to help you assess your needs and to ensure that you get matched with the right counselor. You can actually be in your first session within 24 hours of going to betterhelp.com/surf. Plus, you get 10% off with our promo code, which is the word surf. And again, I'm proud to be able to partner with these guys. It is a great service and resource. I hope that it helps you, and if you don't need it, feel free to pass along the info to somebody who might. Okay, back to Rochelle. Was any of this covered in the surf media?
No.
Like, I don't know any of this about you, and I followed you. Yeah.
Nobody was doing that stuff back then.
Yeah,
no. And when I started surfing to yoga, you know, and everything I was doing, all this great knowledge that I was given and experience and, you know, the things that just kept coming to me, you know, my friends are like, oh my God, you need to tell the world about this stuff. And I don't know, I've done that slowly, but I've watched so many people become huge in the media by telling them the things that, like, I've had in my back pocket all these years. And Megan Abubo, my friend, she's like, I can't believe that, like, all the things that you used to tell me, like, now are these great things all over the place, and you've known all this stuff all these years.
Yeah.
And I just was fortunate enough to receive them, but also that I was passionate about it and called it in and wanted it. And there was that moment of, like, where your life has that fork in the road, right? And when I retired from the tour, I wasn't planning on just leaving the industry or surfing. I just was wanting to do it in a different way, and I've always done that. I've always kind of said, well, yeah, sure, this is what's going on, but I'd really like to be a free surfer at this stage and be a mentor and do all these cool things. And it's just, I thought that I was going to be able to do that through O'Neill. And right when I was signing my contract, they sold the entire company except for wetsuits. And so everything changed. And all of a sudden, the callback didn't come. And so I sat there with the rug pulled from under me and didn't receive my monthly check in January when the new year started of me becoming that, you know, where I was going next. And so I quickly, frantically had to vacation rent my house and figure out what I was doing and started going through my savings because it just wasn't happening. So I did what I thought best to do. I went on a surf trip.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, I got to go surfing. Well, I need to go surfing. I need to surf some good waves. I need to go, like, you know, see what's happening with my life and my career right now, because I wasn't ready for what was coming yet.
You know, what's funny is so many people are going through that exact thing right now with the Hurley thing. Are you familiar with
no,
this?
No, what happened?
Oh, you didn't. This was in the news last week. They sold. Hurley sold. Oh. Nobody's contract's getting renewed. Carissa's
no
off. John John's
way
off. Everybody's done. So, but that's, the rug is pulled out completely.
Right. That's radical.
But so I think, to be honest,
yeah,
and it's good. It's the resetting is actually, I think, a really healthy
yeah
thing.
It
and
is.
I've never seen a scenario where paying 13-year-old kids thousands of dollars a month mm-hmm to surf actually serves them well, nor serves the industry well. Like, it only
yeah
serves the company who's using that as marketing. That they benefit, nobody else benefits. I don't think that kid becomes a better surfer.
No.
Like, once you have the rug pulled out and you have to reset and really find what matters most, you actually become more actualized, more character develops, you know, and ultimately probably a better surfer because of those things.
100%.
More grateful too.
I'm coaching this girl that's 13 right now, Malia, and she is such a good surfer. I'm so impressed with her surfing. I love working with her. And it's interesting because she's so concerned about what's happening in, you know, the elite level and with, and she should be. But from my perspective, it's interesting because it's all in the social media, so in your face every day. And then the whole sponsorship thing, you know, and wanting to get sponsored so bad. And I'm like, I keep telling him, like, you know, you have the best team you could have right now. You have me as
yeah
your coach, and your mom has the ability to pay me and to take you to all the events and to pay for you to get, like, Channel Island custom surfboards and anything that you need. So just slow down for a minute.
Yeah.
It's gonna come.
Yeah.
But you know what? You also have to prove yourself. You don't just get it. And so, yes, you're a good surfer, but let's go win some contests.
Yeah.
You know, let's go surf the North Shore. Let's do this, like, a little bit more of, like, a slowed down way and understand the value of where you're going into and that you really do want this in your career. Like,
yeah,
this is, if you want it, you got to earn it.
Yep.
It doesn't get handed to you.
Totally.
So yeah. Yeah. It's fun. But yeah, I mean, so back to that place of, like, so I'm like, okay, I'm going to go on a surf trip. So we end up, like, my dad, he's so supportive as well. He's like, okay, well, I got a bunch of miles, you know, I'll pay for your miles to go. And so we did this, like, last minute trip to Micronesia and went with Kavika Stillwell, my next door neighbor that I grew up with here. He's a great barrel rider. And this guy, Mitchell, that was, you know, one of the boat guys over there. And he's like, let's go, this is the time. And Jamie O'Brien. And so we surfed one day, all day at Ponape, like 6 to 8 feet, and just off its nuts. It was just ridiculous. Best barrels I've ever surfed in my
really
life. Yeah, it was incredible. And we got video, and there just happened to be, you know, like, some Aussie guys there, and you know, photographers, this whole deal. It was fascinating. It was really fun. So I came home and I was obviously feeling really good, but I'm like, I'm still not making money.
Yeah.
You know, I got put in the magazines, and I thought, oh, maybe there's going to be, like, a reset here, and somebody will pick me up, and I can just be that free surfer and be a mentor and do what I really want to do because I have all these great ideas. And then it just never happened. And it was just baffling to me that, like, the surf industry was so set in their ways with particularly women surfing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the men are all taken, we're all taken care of. I know it's all changing, and all is a big word. But the elite is where I'm going, coming from, yeah?
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, well, it's not going to happen. I'm not going to force it. I'm not going to fight it. I'm not going to, you know, cry into my pillow. I got to step up and be a big girl. And so I had to put my big girl pants on and figure it out. And so we made the surf video, and it was like, I did this really fun, you know, 5 minute or whatever it was, 4 minute intro of me surfing Ponape and Mentawise and the North Shore and this whole thing, and then went into the sequencing. And it was really fun. And it just kind of, all that really just was the seed to start the retreat business and to dive deeper into, you know, being a yoga teacher and, you know, doing Lomi and all that. And I had this really cool experience with this polarity master. And he stayed with me at my house. He literally, like, walked to my property and said, "Hi, I'm here. And I want to I want to have you apprentice with me." And what that looks like is I'm going to live here at your house, and we're going to do this for, like, you know, a few months and dive deep into it. And we did, and it was really cool. And, you know, we just opened up the door for other people to come and learn. And so it was a you know, teaching space as well.
There's my ride. Okay. Well, I feel like I could talk to you for 2 hours, and I'm sad that we can't, that we're cut short on time. But I will say, because it relates to everything that you're saying, yeah, come on in. When I came across your Instagram, whenever I started following you a year or two ago, you looked happier and healthier than I'd ever seen you before. And you always looked happy and healthy. You looked more so in your current phase of life.
Thank you.
Congrats. You figured it out.
Taking care of yourself is important.
Yeah.
You know, being well to yourself and eating whole foods, staying away from processed foods and dairy and all that stuff. And yoga and surfing,
you know,
being happy.
I was thrilled to see it.
You're
shredded, you know?
Yeah, I feel good.
It's good to see. Awesome. Well, thank you, Rochelle.
You're welcome.
Like I said, our conversation was cut short due to last-minute shift in our schedules, so I will be sure to reconnect with Rochelle and go deeper. But until then, you can follow her at Rochelle Ballard and at Surf Into Yoga. And be sure to reach out if you're ever on Kauai. Her programs are really world-class. So I've posted images and links to all of it on surfsplendorpodcast.com, along with her surfing. And if anyone can find footage of that wipeout that she described being towed into, I'd also love to share that. As of right now, I've never even seen it. So send that to me if you got it. And then you can also leave a comment for Rochelle on the website. I'm actually on the North Shore right now, where I'll be recording a few more podcasts to be shared in the coming months. And if you rate and review the show in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, that will help push us through that omnipresent algorithm to ensure that strangers are able to find us as well. And then share with non-strangers. You can follow us on Instagram at Surf Splendor, and it's real simple to share the show there just by tagging friends or DMing it to them. I thank you for doing that. You helping us grow helps ensure that we continue to get great guests like Rochelle Ballard. So that is all for now. Until next week, this is David Scales for Surf Splendor, reminding you to get back into the ocean, share some waves, and shred on.